Hello again, everybody. This is Joe Pernesti, and welcome to another edition of In Their Own Words on Firefighter Engineering Blog Talk Radio. And on today's podcast, we're going to talk about communications and something that, we do it every fire. And whenever there's a problem, it always seems to come up good, bad, or indifferent. And that is communications, listening, and understanding. And as always, before we go any further, I want to give a shout out and thanks, as always, to Chief Bobby Halton and web page editor Pete Prochillo at Fire Engineering for giving me this wonderful opportunity to bring the authors of articles and instructors in their own words to you, the listener. And today, again, we're talking about an article that was in the May 2021 Fire Engineering magazine, and the title is "Can You Hear Me Now?" And our guest today is retired FDNY Deputy Chief Thomas Dunn. Chief Dunn, thanks for coming on. If you would introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your career.
Sure, Joe. Hi. Thanks. First of all, thanks to you, Joe, and to Fire Engineering for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. And my thanks to anyone who happens to be listening in to this podcast. It's a pleasure. You mentioned the article in the May issue of Fire Engineering. I wrote about communication for a specific reason. Like most firefighters, I'm really pretty much a hands-on type of guy. And the majority of my teaching, much of my writing, has to do with the actual strategy and tactics of firefighting. And yet there's something, sort of a subtle, soft area that affects us at everything we do, not only at a fire scenario or an emergency, but in all aspects of our lives. And that's the communication aspect. Briefly, about my background, as you mentioned, I'm a retired deputy chief with the FDNY. I had the pleasure of working 33 years with the New York City Fire Department, and it enabled me to see quite a bit since I went, like every other firefighter, through the ranks, starting as the lowest guy in the totem pole as the new recruit, and eventually making my way through the company officer rank, and eventually the battalion chief and the deputy chief ranks. I've been retired for years now, still keeping very active with my writing and my consultation occasionally, and certainly with the lecturing. We're coming at the very edge of the COVID-19 crisis, and I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to once again be heading back to face-to-face lecturing. I'll be at FDIC with a lot of other great instructors and a lot of things after that. So that's a sort of a thumbnail sketch of my background. Going back to the article, as I say, I thought about writing about communication for some time and wanted to figure out the best approach to do it, because a communication article has the potential, I think, to be very helpful to firefighters, yet at the same time has the potential to be a very boring article. So yeah. I tried my best to illustrate as much as possible how relevant proper communication is, not only, like I say, in the fire service, but in essentially everything we do in life. How you conduct yourself as a firefighter or a company officer or just an individual in the corporate boardroom, I think radically affects how people see you and how efficient your work is and how easy it is for people to work with you. And that's kind of the background of this particular article. As I said, many of my previous articles were more geared to strategy and tactics and often referred to specific jobs, specific fires I had with the FDNY.
You know, Chief, you mentioned that, you were worried that some of these articles as far as, you know, communications or listening or the radio or what have you is could be boring. And I think that that you kind of hit the nail on the head that one thing that I wanted to try to emphasize in command and control is that it's sometimes missed just because of that, that we kind of glance over educating our newer members or right from the beginning when they start on the job, all the way up, how to talk on a radio or what is important. And the other thing, and digress a little bit, that one of the other things, if you are listening to this and you're thinking about writing an article, the one thing that Chief Dunn here has done on this article is that he brings up an analogy of Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941, and communications. And he describes the event that was in a book by John McManus called Fire and Fortitude. And you talk about how a officer, he was looking at the radar and it was the breakdown in communications of how one of them, paraphrasing, they saw 50 planes on a screen, on a radar screen. And again, this is 80 years ago. So, you know, primitive radar, but you know, the breakdown in communication and what he was trying to say, hey, we got all these planes coming in and somebody saying, oh yeah, you know, I was listening on the radio whenever they play a certain song on the radio in Hawaii here at Pearl Harbor, that means there's a bunch of bombers coming in. Well, it ended up being the Japanese attacking. So right there is a breakdown that the analogy is, you're right. It doesn't matter whether it's in the military, corporate world, that breakdown of communication can be very costly. And you know, especially in the safety forces, in police and fire, that breakdown can cause a lot of issues. So I'm glad that you'd said that, you know, you wanted to write about it. And so let's dive right into it. When you talk about the survival, what you call in the article, survival trilogy, in the trilogy of effective communication, physical conditioning, and situational awareness. Do you mind kind of going over those three and describing to the listener that maybe hasn't read this, what you're trying to get at with that trilogy, what they mean and what they should mean to a firefighter or an officer?
Sure, Joe. Let's start with the physical conditioning. And I will start with that. And I always emphasize that because unfortunately, if you look at firefighter fatalities going back years or decades for that matter, still almost 50% of our fatalities are heart attack, cardiac related. And yet this is one of the most physical jobs you can do. And you consider that the work patterns are erratic, the sleep patterns are erratic. You might come from a very quiet afternoon in the kitchen and suddenly you're walking up six or seven flights of stairs, you know, wearing all the firefighting gear and the bunker gear and a mask and functioning under a lot of stress. So just physical conditioning alone is something that I don't think overemphasized. Throughout my career, even when I got to a point where I was no longer physically required to do the job as a chief, very, very intent about staying in shape. So I think that's sort of the bottom of the trilogy, if you will. Situational awareness, I mean, we've heard that so many times now from so many people. The word almost loses its effectiveness. But obviously what they're saying, what it means essentially is knowing what's going on around you. Because there's so much going on in such a short period of time, especially at the initial stages of any fire or emergency operation, you have a potential to hurt yourself or hurt people around you if you don't view yourself as part as an overall plan. For example, if you are in a ladder company and your assignment is ventilation and you break a window at the wrong time, well, you may break a window very effectively, but you may be doing it at precisely the wrong moment where it could hurt the engine people or people working inside a building. And certainly as you go up through the ranks to a company officer or incident commander position, knowing what's going around you, being part of that big picture, understanding the big picture is vital. What pieces it all together, I think, and we tend to underemphasize this, is communication, how we speak to each other. We all start out on the job in the same way. We go to some version of a recruit academy, which is very tactical, very hands-on oriented, where we learn to use tools, we get in physical shape, we do laddering, things of that nature. And I had some really excellent training in the FDNY through the years, even as a new recruit. However, I'd have to say I never once remember us sitting down in a room and really discussing how you should speak on the radio, especially for new recruits. What is important? What should you say? When is it vitally important that you stay quiet? And most firefighters over time evolve to a point where they kind of understand these things, but it can be a slow learning process. And while they're going through that process, inadequate or poor communications can take a toll on the safety of the overall operation. So that's kind of what I refer to as the trilogy. And to a great extent, the communication, of the physical conditioning might be the basis of that trilogy. How you conduct yourself, how you communicate as a firefighter, as a company officer, as a chief, I think it's hard to de-emphasize just how important that is. You referenced the December 7th Pearl Harbor incident, and in that specific incident, the two Army privates who were monitoring the radar reported when they picked up these 50 planes coming in, when they reported that information to their officer, they did not specify it was 50 planes. They said it was a blip of planes coming in. And that choice of that one word affected their knowledge as to exactly what was coming in, because an assumption was made that there were some American B-17s coming in. If they had told that officer the specific information they had, if they had communicated that they in fact were seeing 50 or more planes, the officer would have right away realized that it could not possibly be 17s. So that's just one little example, a historical example of how poor or ineffective communication may have, certainly affected what happened that day and conceivably affected history.
One of the things that I find that in research and the history in the fire service is that, giving everybody a portable radio is relatively new, I would say, in the fire service, at least in most departments like my size of 65 firefighters and maybe 14 people on duty in the case of my department, where, it's only been probably, I would say, 20, 25 years where everybody got a radio. And I think when we started out, and I would love to hear your opinion on that, on this, is that we give everybody a radio like you helmet and boots. Here's your part of your gear. Put it in your pocket, and we don't need to tell you how to use your helmet or your boots. It's just an assumed thing. Here's your radio. It's for you to call for help on. And then that same firefighter then in 5 to 10 years, who may never have talked on radio, it was a safety item, has been promoted. And you're right. We just keep on assuming that they know how to use the radio. Would you say that that's kind of a fair assumption of how we treat communications in the average size fire department, that maybe where we go wrong today?
Yeah, I agree with that, Joe. I think there are certain assumptions made by everybody, whether it's a large or a small department, that, like you say, you issue the radio and the assumption is, well, yeah, you press this button, you turn this channel on, and we can talk to each other. And since everyone, or at least many departments, most people seem to be carrying a radio, there are positives and negatives to that. And the positive, obviously, is a safety thing. If you're ever in trouble, if you ever need to transmit a mayday, heaven forbid, or if you need resources, you have immediate access to your own personal radio. The negative side of that is if you're dealing with firefighters who are not comfortable talking on the radio, either because they have not done it before, or maybe they don't. I think a chronic problem in some departments is radio discipline. Maybe they don't know when just to be quiet, what is vital information, what you should say, what you should not say. In my job, a typical first response in my job would bring me, you know, four engines, three trucks, several battalion chiefs, a couple specialty units. Right away, we would have at least 60 firefighters on scene with radios, which again is a great safety factor. But you can imagine sometimes when things were really going poorly or a lot was happening at one time, that was a lot of radio interference. There were many situations where it just became overwhelming. And as the incident commander, I had to step up and basically in an official but a firm manner tell, you know, stand by unless you have something urgent. Just kind of calm down the radio traffic. Again, I think it is a training issue. I think, you know, certainly the meat and potatoes of our job is the physical aspect of going up flights of stairs, taking doors, stretching hose lines, and that's a lot of what we do in the drill ground, understandably. I always like to, when I conduct those things, to incorporate the communication aspect of it, to get people on scene talking to each other, saying things like, you know, chauffeur to engine one, we're charging the line, ladder to the battalion, we're taking the door. Just even though it's a practice situation, I found that this got people involved in the hands-on actual operation of the radio and talking on the radio, and it made them that much more confident in dealing with the radio. And so when they were actually at a real situation at a fire scene, it enabled them to function a lot more effectively.
You talk about the three communication components. I think that's something, and again, I'll have you talk about that. But, you know, one of the things that I find when we take for granted that everybody knows everybody on the fire ground and it's all going to be seamless because I know Chief Dunn, Chief Dunn knows Joe Pernesti. We're just going to be able to communicate like we're having a cup of coffee at the table. And that's not necessarily the case when you put an urgent situation in front of you, stressful situation in front of you. But talk about the three components and how important they are, because I think this is where the true breakdown is on the fire ground that starts the dominoes from falling or starts the dominoes falling are those three communication components.
Yeah, sure. Those are important. That's something that I hit on it. Any lecture I do about being an incident commander or actual fire ground operations or thinking like an incident commander, which is one of my more popular courses I'll be doing actually the same morning you'll be doing your class at FDIC. But when you come right down to it, communications, you could break it down to three separate and equally important components. Although even in a well-disciplined, well-trained department like mine, you didn't always see that. You might see it initially at the earlier stages of an operation. You would probably see it at a relatively simple operation. But when things started getting intense, when things started going poorly, when a lot was happening at one time, when there were concerns for people's well-being, that's exactly when it started breaking down. So to go back to the three components, very simple. First one, identify. Who are you? Okay? I'm sure everyone has experienced things on the fire ground like, back it up, or I got the hooks, yeah, or where's my water, or something of that nature. Well, we have to identify who is speaking. Is it engine one, chauffeur to command, we've got water? Is it ladder two to command, we're taking the door and starting the primary search? You know, we have to identify specifically who you are. And the second part of that communication component is the content. All right, now here's where we take a deep breath. Here's where, even though there's a lot going on, maybe there's an awful lot you want to say, maybe you're under a lot of stress at the moment. All right, here's where you have to pause and take that deep breath. Formulate in your mind, even just for a few seconds, what is it I'm trying to convey? What is it I'm trying to tell this person? I found often as a firefighter, and certainly as an incident commander, as a chief officer, that if I just held myself off for 2 or 3 seconds and formulated in my mind what the important content was, what that message was, it helped me quite a bit. And the third part of the three components, something that is not, again, you don't always hear on the fire ground, but it's also important, is the acknowledgement. The recognition that the message that you sent either to the battalion or incident command or engine one or whoever it was you were trying to speak to, that you got an acknowledgement from command, message received, or engine one, message received. And if you don't get that, especially at a very busy fire ground operation where there's a great deal of radio communication going on, you have to make the assumption that your radio message is bouncing out on the ionosphere somewhere way up in the air and no one gets it. And you must absolutely repeat that message because you may have heard it, maybe the people around you heard it, but there's a good chance if you don't get a clear acknowledgement that your message didn't get through. Rather than speak more on it, I have a brief recording of actually one of my fire ground transmissions that I think illustrates in a negative way what we're talking about. Let me preface this by saying that by far most of my fire ground experience with FDNY firefighters was excellent, and most of our fire ground radio communication was disciplined and efficient and to the point. But even a great, large, well-trained department like the FDNY occasionally will run into scenarios where you're just overwhelmed, all right? To give you sort of a the background of this fire, this is one of my incidents. This is one of the ones that, as a chief officer, sticks in my head. It's January or February a few years ago. It is very cold. It's single digits. It's probably, I think it was like 7 or 8 degrees. I'm running a fire that at this point has probably gone to 4 alarms, is affecting 3 or 4 buildings. There's an awful lot going on, and all of a sudden I'm hearing about a missing member. A member observes a setback of a building that lit up on fire, and he thought he saw one of our firefighters standing on that setback. And understandably, he's very, very excited, very upset, and he has some very vital information to transmit to me as the incident commander. He tries to give a mayday. In fact, as we run this thing, if you listen very carefully, you might even hear the brief mayday. But more than anything, what you can hear in this recording is his upset. You can hear the fact that there's a lot going on, and despite the fact that he's trying to transmit something that's vitally important, the interference just continues on in the background since there's other things going on. So let me see if I can possibly run for a minute or so just to illustrate kind of the downside of what can happen if we are not as efficient as we should be. Guy screaming, very upset, trying to tell me about someone on the exposure 3 side, which most people refer to as the C side, the rear of the building, that he saw someone up there with no means of egress. He's trying to communicate this to me as the incident commander, and despite the importance of that message, you can hear other transmissions breaking in because, not that they're not motivated, not that they're not good firefighters, they're not doing the thing they should be doing, which is listening. And that's really, really hard at times when there's a lot going on. So that's sort of an example of some of the things you might be subjected to on the fire ground. How do you deal with that? How did I deal with that? Well, you know, at that point, fortunately, I was pretty much experienced as an incident commander, had seen similar things in the past, yet it was very, very upsetting to hear that one of my firefighters might be in trouble. And I took a deep breath, took over command of the radio channels, tried to sound professional, tried to sound calm. This is something I believe very strongly in. Despite what you're feeling, despite how confused or upset or stressed out you may feel at that particular moment, especially if you're in a position of leadership, if you're a company officer or chief officer, you have to be able to take a deep breath, calm down, and fake it. You have to project yourself as someone who's calm and under control, and they could tell you a bomb just dropped, but you're going to take a deep breath and say, all right, this is what we're going to do. Trying to project this air of confidence out on the radio as the leader of that fire operation, because you are in fact doing that. You are setting the tone for that operation. And if you're going to sound nervous, if you're going to turn into a screamer, I think I mentioned in the article that we've all worked for screamers at some point in our careers as firefighters, that's going to do nothing but make the situation worse.
Yeah, it is extremely important that you do take that deep breath. And I think that, and to sound, you know, calm and cool, I also think, though, in my own case, that two mistakes that I made that I still make today is that I will give out an order without getting the attention of the company that I want. That I'll just say, instead of my, you know, chief three to engine one, wait for them to answer and then give that information. I will sometimes, in the heat of battle, just say chief three to engine one, lay an inch three quarter line to division two, or blah, blah, blah. I think it's important, like you mentioned earlier, two things. One, you practice getting, you know, that, hey, you know, I'm calling you, please answer. I'm going to tell you what to do. And then when things are going south, to be able to stay calm. And I really think the one way, and I would like your opinion on this, to train on that is by listening to not only yourself in past events, but to listen to audio of fires around the country. You know, there, with the internet and with everything we have today, it is very easy to get on and on your computer and to play audio and to listen to audio, and then to put yourself in the IC shoes and run it. Curious your thoughts, how if you would train like that, you know, what advice you would give as far as doing something like that to a chief officer or a company officer.
Yeah, like I say, there's a lot of material available now that was not available years ago, either through the internet or through training classes, that allow you to actually to listen remotely to fire operations. Sometimes even as they're in the process of going on, you can go on and click on to various sites that will help you with this. I'd say two things I did with the FDNY that were very helpful. First of all, everyone has their own DNA. There are some people that just, let's face it, are just calmer than others. And I tended to want to learn from the calmer people. I worked with some of the Babe Ruths of the fire service when I was a firefighter in mid-Manhattan. Vinnie Dunn was one of the deputy chiefs upstairs. And Vinnie's not a relative of mine. He spells his name differently, but one thing I always noted with Vinny that at a fire operation, and there were some pretty involved things going on in Manhattan, he was always in control. He wasn't the loudest guy on the scene, but he He was a guy who seemed in control of himself, in control of the scenario. And I worked for a number of people like that in the FDNY, so I was able to kind of sort of mentor myself by observing people who just were outstanding firefighters and outstanding leaders and were able to communicate in a certain way. I tended to want to back off from the people who were just the opposite, those that were, you know, maybe short-tempered, kind of brusque and on the radio and would do more alienation and stress out their personnel than anything else. So I think certainly observing the people around you, certain people around you are really good at that. But yeah, you can learn a lot on your own. One of the things that FDNY does that I found very, very helpful, both for my own purposes and also this was great material for drills after a fire. When we had a structural fire or any type of major incident, they would issue these CDs that had all the fire ground recordings, all the radio recordings that occurred at that incident. And I would listen to this, and I would, to some extent, I would self-critique. I'd want to hear how I sounded, you know, and sometimes I sounded pretty good. Other times, I didn't sound as good as I wanted to be, and I would concentrate on what I could do to improve my own performance. And then what I would do, what this made for a great company drill, I would go to one of the units that was involved in that fire and bring the CD with me, and we'd throw it into a laptop or a computer. And without putting anyone on the spot, because you don't want to make people uncomfortable hearing themselves, I would kind of listen to some of the fire ground transmissions and ask them, what do you think? Did you understand what they were saying? Was it clear? Did this person sound like they pretty much had a handle on the situation, a handle on themselves? Or, you know, does anyone have any ideas of how we could have done this a little better? And that accomplished two things. First of all, it got guys very much involved in the drill. Rather than coming in and talking about, you know, a technical analysis of some type of tool, to actually listen to recordings at an operation that they were involved in, to listen sometimes to their own voices, really caught their attention, got them involved. And I found that was a great way of learning what to do and what not to do on the fire ground. And it takes time. You know, most people come on the fire service and they have not been emergency responders. In most cases, they're dealing with a whole new identity of themselves. They're dealing with life and death situations, which they may not have dealt with before unless they were military veterans. And they're going to be under a certain amount of stress at their first maybe several dozen fires. And it's a slow learning process, that ability to slow down, gather control of yourself, gather control of your thoughts. And all while you're doing this, you're trying to formulate those thoughts into a radio message to people around you that sounds confident and effective. So I found that for me and for many of my firefighters, that those were pretty neat ways of learning communications or at least refining your communication skills. And you don't have to be in a very busy company or a very busy department for that matter, because these resources are available even if it's not your department, even if it's not your fire. It makes for a great drill, for a great training period to sit down and to actually listen to some fire ground radio transmissions and try to figure out, right, what are they doing well here? What are they doing poorly? How can we improve on this? When I give my course, Think Like an Incident Commander, which I'll be doing at FDIC again, I always take time to incorporate a communication component in it where we take, in this case, one of my fires, and we listen to a series of transmissions and kind of break down, all right, what did we do well here, what did we do poorly, and how can we improve on it in the future? Because as I said, it's part of that trilogy I mentioned in the beginning of the article, the current article, along with physical conditioning and situational awareness. You might be the best conditioned firefighter on the planet, But if you can't communicate calmly and effectively, there's times when, you know, all of your other components are just not going to work out.
How would you, two questions for you. One, they're both, they're on opposite ends here, but number one, what advice would you give to a boss or an incident commander, a shift boss that has a officer who may talk too much on the radio? How would you go about telling that? We've all worked with those people, and when you get into a leadership or supervisory position, you know, we sometimes run into those. I myself, you know, if there was one thing, and I say this at all my any classes that I teach, and I tell this to the guys that work for me now, if there was one thing, I became a company officer in 1995, and if there was one thing that I could change about myself going back in 1995 and now, is how I talked on the radio. And I was, you know, I'm not bashful that, you know, I do things a whole lot different now and sound a whole lot different, but I was one of those that may have talked just to talk. And curious what advice you would give to an IC there, or again, a shift commander, to approach and to, you know, suddenly, you know, correct or give a lesson or teach to somebody who might be doing something like that.
Yeah, you know what you mean, because I went through a similar learning process. You know, I started in an engine as a firefighter, most of the time did not have a radio, eventually transferred over to a ladder company where I started to be comfortable with the radio, but really had to go through a couple of years at the battalion chief and rank before I became a deputy chief to get to a level where I was pretty comfortable with the radio. I would say, you know, it brings me back to the thought of you praise in public and you criticize privately. If I listen to radio transmissions at an operation, or anything in operation for that matter, that I did not like, I'm going to find out who is involved specifically, and I'm going to speak to him or her, whoever's involved, privately. If I can, I usually like to get my people together right after a fire and just thank them for their work, run through the stuff that went well, whether that was a water supply or a rapid transmission of additional alarms or whatever. But the criticism, the negative stuff, especially if it was one individual involved, I liked doing that privately because, first of all, you can be more effective talking to that person, and you don't want to put anyone on the spot. I would say that's how I approach most of the job as a leader. If I was having issues with communication, I would try to take that person aside and say, look, this is not working. Again, I had the advantage of having CDs that had the actual fireground recordings of things that went on at the scene of an operation. And if I thought there was a real problem with an individual, I probably arranged to meet him in his office or my office in a very informal manner and maybe even start off by playing the CD that might have some recordings that didn't go well that he was involved in. Mm-hmm. Did that once and didn't have to say a word because the person involved said, yeah, you mean, you know,
you want to
praise in public and criticize privately. I believe in that as a general management rule. And the same is true of communication. If someone is not doing well on the fire ground, if they're a real chatterbox, sometimes they just don't know. More likely they're a nervous person or an inexperienced person. And it comes down to a training problem. You cannot change someone's personality, right? Some people are just quiet and withdrawn. They're not going to say that much. One of the best company officers who worked for me was a very experienced captain in the Bronx who was one of the best fire officers I ever knew, yet getting a word out of his mouth on the radio was a chore, you know, as opposed to some newer guys who weren't quite sure of what they should be saying or not be saying, and they were chatterboxes. So I would try to take each case at an individual level, but I found that dealing with it privately helped quite a bit in terms of relaxing that person, letting them know I'm not criticizing them in public, that it's hopefully a learning process. And again, there were one or two or three instances where I just threw the CD in the computer and
that was it. Yeah, that's all they needed.
I see what you mean. I understand. I think in general, that's the way to teach people. You don't want to put them on the spot.
And then my next question is, what is your thoughts on what we call CAN reports, conditions, actions, and needs? And, you know, I again, FDNY is a totally different animal, and, you know, as far as how they operate with staffing and everything. But curious if you, you know, what you would talk to departments or when you teach, your thoughts on having a procedure emphasizing CAN reports, what your thoughts are on that.
I'd have to say, you know, everyone has their own perspective on this. And I've got mine, and I think a lot of people would probably disagree with mine. But personally, as a firefighter and as a chief and as a leader and as a person, I hate acronyms. I always hated acronyms.
Sure.
I felt that the human mind, especially the human mind under stress, is not geared for stuff like that. CAN is a very short acronym, but I've seen some that are like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 letters long. When we are under stress on the fire ground, our mind doesn't work like that. We have a hard time just grasping on, I think, two or three concepts at one time. So conditions, actions, needs, yeah, that addresses very important stuff, but I don't think that that's how most humans operate, at least how most firefighters or how I operate. I know there are certain acronyms like COAL was wealth is used to illustrate the the key 13 points of size up. Even as a very experienced deputy chief, towards the end of my career, I was probably one of the most experienced incident commanders in the job. I couldn't hold on to 13 concepts. It was beyond my capability. I tried to keep it as simple as possible. I don't know if I mentioned it in the article, but one of the things I emphasize when I give lectures, especially when it's a lecture about incident command and how to run an operation, especially if you're not an inexperienced officer, I like to start off as simple as possible. I refer to what I call the three W's. Mm-hmm. Who have you got? Where are they? And have you got water? I always feel if you can address those three in your mind, that's only three simple concepts, and regardless of the nature of the operation you're at, whether it's a fire or a hazmat situation or a plane crash or whatever you're responding to, if you, in the first minute or two of that operation, you can start to establish who's on scene, where they are, and if you got water, it's simple, it's quick, it's vital, and it's sort of a building point. You can build from there. As you set up different divisions or sectors of that operation, you can set up division or sector commanders and let them worry about the details. All right, let them get back to you with the information you're looking for as far as how many people have you got, what are the conditions in your particular division or your sector of the fire. I always believe in life in general, and certainly on the fire ground, I tried to keep it as simple as possible. That was my approach.
Sure.
And it, for me, I'd have to also say that I'm one of those lucky individuals who had a very, very lucky career. You have to be good. You have to try your best. You have to train. But in emergency management and firefighting, there is the luck aspect. You know, some people I've worked with and for some excellent firefighters and excellent incident commanders who had horrific experiences on the fire ground just by circumstance. I was lucky. I tried my best, and I tried to keep it as simple as possible. And as far as conditions, actions, needs, Yeah, it's something I would look at that I might think about if I was writing one of my articles for fire engineering. But as far as actual fire ground performance, I tended to stay away from acronyms. I tried to keep it simple initially and grow on it from there.
Chief, I want to thank you. I appreciate the time on this. This is something that, again, you said you were hesitant because you think it's boring, but I do believe that when it comes to tactics and strategy and command, communications is really a big part of that. So again, the article is in the May 2021 Fire Engineering. Do you hear me now? Retired FDNY Deputy Chief Thomas Dunn. Thank you. And if you would, in closing, tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you to maybe get you lined up for a class or for any kind of consulting.
Sure. Let me give you my website, which is www.chieftomdunn.com. That's www.chieftomdunne.com. Final point I did want to make is that you learn, whether it's communication or other aspects of your career in firefighting, you learn from your mistakes. I made many mistakes that I didn't speak of today, but I learned from them. So expect to make mistakes in your career. You will. Hopefully, you will learn from them. If you're curious to do some reading about my mistakes, I'm quite honest about some of them in my book, which is called Notes from the Fireground. It's available on Amazon or through the publisher. And I get into pretty intricate details, a painfully honest book about many of my experiences and many of my growing pains and experiences with the FDNY.
I can say firsthand that it is an excellent book. I did download it and read it on my iPad actually while I was on vacation earlier, and it is a wonderful book. So again, if our listeners are looking for a good fire service book, Chief Dunn's Notes from the Fireground is an excellent read, and he does. He teaches the lessons based on, the mistakes and being willing to share from them. So, Chief Dunn, thanks again for joining us today.
Joe, thank you. I appreciate the invitation.